Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, November 19th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 5 hour and 10 minutes or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as two guests join me on the program here today. The first, Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. We'll chat some NFL, some NHL, and some golf with him. Second half of today's show, professional handicapper Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com will join me. We'll talk some college football and some college basketball with him to finish up today's show. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information covering all five of those sports betting markets, plus the NBA, plus soccer, plus NASCAR, although that's now done for the season, UFC, tennis, when that rolls back around, esports. We got a lot of stuff going on over at the website. Make sure you check it all out. Make sure you check out our Bang the Book YouTube page as well. We'll have some free pick video content up for you here as we go throughout the week. And, of course, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200, is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here today, and we start with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
I'm doing well, Adam. How are you, my friend?
Doing all right, getting by. You know, busy time of year here. Of course, got that solid change of seasons cold since, you know, it was bitter cold. Then it warmed up a little bit. Now it's just kind of damp and gross outside. So thank
you, Mother Nature, for that. Yeah, I hear you, man. I'm telling you, I'm watching that game last night. You know, we bet on this stuff, you know. And what am I missing, buddy? Rivers goes back. He throws the long pass to Williams. He catches it. It's like a, whatever it was, 40, 45-yard pass. And he catches it, and the guy touches him, and he's in bounds. And the referee, the guy stops the clock. Well, I mean, they had to run 40 yards to get set even just to clock it. It would have taken 20 seconds off the clock, and nobody says anything. I'm flipping out. I'm going nuts. Two plays later, the referee expert on the broadcast goes, you know, I think Mike Williams was in bounds, and that should have been a running clock. Said, yeah, you think? You know, and then Rivers goes and throws the pick. You're telling me you can't get the most simple call right with the game on the line? And we're sitting here worried about pass interference and all this other nonsense? Ay, ay, ay.
It's an epidemic. I mean, we've talked about it a lot. And that's the thing, too, man, is, you know, the NFL, it's like we've talked about before. It's a hard enough market to beat without all this other stuff going on of these bad review calls, the coaches, the officiating. This is I probably shouldn't say this publicly on a show where we talk about the NFL, but this is the least enjoyable NFL season that I can remember. And there are some good teams. There have been some good games, stuff like that. But just from a betting standpoint, I can't take it week after week. I just
when you watch
the incompetence.
When you watch a game, there are no kick returns. But, I mean, when you watch a punt return, aren't you almost shocked there's not a flag?
All the time.
I don't know.
Every time a quarterback scrambles and then throws downfield for 25 yards, I'm looking for holding. I'm looking for an eligible man downfield. Every play. I mean, it's natural. You just look for a flag immediately.
I get it. I mean, that one just stuck out to me like a sore thumb. I'm literally, like, yelling, he's in bounds. And then they just get up and, you know, they stop it and they walk around and now there's 47 seconds left. And they're at the 23. Okay, well, okay. You know, they got an army of plays at their disposal. If that guy makes the right call, I mean, literally, that clock's probably running down to the 20-second range. You know, I mean, they're down to three or four plays left in the game. They literally, that guy missing that call, literally San Diego, you know, conceivably could have run about eight, nine plays. I don't know. And then, you know, they just gloss over it like it was nothing.
It's unbelievable. I can't believe it was pretty funny because I'm watching.
Real quick, the other one, it ended up being an incomplete pass, right? So they could have put time on the clock. But remember the play after that? Rivers he kind of threw and it fell out of his hand. But they ruled it a fumble on the field, right? I mean, the referee threw the beanbag on the ground. And it, so another 20 seconds should have run off the clock. Who stopped the clock? I mean, they stopped the clock. And then they said, well, now we're going to review whether or not it was a fumble. Well, either way, if it was a fumble, you know, the clock got stopped and, you know, the Chargers were going to get all this extra time anyway. But it was ruled a fumble on the field, so the clock should have kept running. There were two plays back-to-back where the clock should have never stopped running, and it stopped twice. I'm going, okay. And, oh, by the way, stop doing this Mexico City thing. That field was an atrocity.
Yeah. Yeah, it was terrible. And also, too, again, I mean, you're talking about a place that's well above Denver in terms of elevation, so that's not particularly fair to these teams that go down there. I know that they've tried to put, you know, the AFC West teams that play in Denver anyway down there, but yeah, that's something that they need to stop. And I understand trying to grow the game, but I mean, this isn't like the NHL going to Sweden or the Czech Republic or something like that. This is a much, much different type of animal. I mean, they play a lot of hockey in Sweden and the Czech Republic. They don't play a lot of NFL football or, you know, really American football in Mexico City on a field like that. It is definitely unsafe for the players. It's not an issue in the NHL. The NBA, the floor is the same no matter what. Baseball, fine. The NFL, I mean, you got to protect these players. They're such big investments that, I mean, you have to protect these guys. I'm surprised they've figured out the London thing as well as they have, but Mexico City does need to end. I agree.
Well, in the hockey thing, don't even get me going. The Europe thing, that's a train wreck too. I mean, the teams that have to go there, I know the Sabres played 12 games in 23 days to go there, then played two games in 12 days, and then, oh, great, congratulations. You know, you went over there, you lose two games, which is their own problem, but then you come back, and because you went to do the league a favor, now you come back and you have to play, I believe it's every other night, virtually the rest of the season, with the exception of the All-Star break and their bye week, and had to play, I think it's 10 games in 17 nights to the end of November. I mean, I don't know. How is that fair to any? The teams that get selected to do this are put in just a ridiculous pickle.
Yeah, they definitely are. Yeah, that's a very true thing. And again, something for you to take a look at here as we go throughout the years with the NHL or, you know, in the NFL. I want to say it's what? Teams that went over to London are now 0-8 against the spread in their next game. And that's coming off of a bye. So that's been a pretty profitable angle here if you've paid attention to that one. I believe the London games are done for this year, so we'll have to pick that up again next season. But, Brian, as we start to take a look here at Week 12, we start with Thursday Night Football, Indianapolis and Houston. Houston, 3.5, 4-point favorite. They got blown out by the Ravens last week. That was supposed to be one of the marquee games of the weekend, and it just wound up being an exhibition for Lamar Jackson and Baltimore. How does Houston bounce back now for this division game on a short week?
Because their season's on the line. I mean, this is a circus act now. Indy basically is in first place. And you sit there and you look at the wild monster game. The loser here, Adam, has a real problem. The Bills are 7-3. Raiders have a favorable schedule with the exception of the game they got to play. Although I'd be very leery of going to cross country to play the Jets this week, but for argument's sake, the Raiders are playing well. The loser of this game has a real issue. And on top of it, if I'm Houston, they got to play Tennessee twice yet. And let me just double check that. They play Tennessee on December 15th at Tampa Bay and then play Tennessee. Tennessee's playing some pretty good football. So if you made the case that Tennessee is going to get a split with Houston, if Houston loses this game, I think they're out. And the loser may be out. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, it's a really difficult spot. And like you said, I mean, for Houston, with the Patriots on deck, and we know what Bill Belichick's capable of doing to Bill O'Brien, then that Broncos game, maybe a little bit of a sandwich, possibly flat spot there a little bit for the Texans. Broncos played very well this past weekend against Minnesota. Then that Titans game on the road. And then the Buccaneers on the road on a short week before you play the Titans again. So the Texans do have a very, very challenging schedule. So, yeah, I mean, this kind of is a backs against the wall type of game for them. Indianapolis looked very good. Nice to get Jacoby Brissett back last week. They wound up playing very well. They won't have Marlon Mack, so that is a little bit of a worry for them. But nice bounce-back effort off that loss to Miami. And I think that's something that we need to focus on maybe a little bit more here as we go throughout the rest of the NFL season. These teams that lose a game that they shouldn't, how do they come back from it? Because I think that tells us a lot about the psychological mindset of these teams now that they've played football for, you know, 10 or 11 weeks here. It lets us know where these teams kind of are. And I think that for Indianapolis to have those tough couple of weeks, come back, win in convincing fashion, tells me that Frank Reich's got this team in the right spot.
Well, they're playing for them. And, oh, by the way, they had a pretty good weekend. But if you're going to be wrong, you might as well go down in flames, because I think we talked about it last week. I spent the better part of the week going, do we not give Houston any respect? You know, I mean, look at their losses. You know, they lost at New Orleans. They lost a close game to Carolina, who's turned into a semi-decent team. They lost at Indy, no disgrace there. And, you know, said, and oh, by the way, they had a 9-game winning streak last week. Are we not giving Houston? And then they go and they don't even show up. I'm like, if you're going to be wrong, man, you know, it was over early. It's like on to the next thing.
Well, and obviously you always want to get the best number you can. So if you lost Arizona and San Francisco, that's on you for not getting 10.5 or 11 that was out there. Yep. I would much rather lose in Houston, Baltimore fashion than ever lose that Arizona, San Francisco fashion.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, yeah, it's nobody's perfect doing this. You know, we're going to have a lot of losers. Yeah, I'd rather just get absolutely freight trained than sit there and go, you know, you're right and something goofy happened, you know. But whatever. I mean, a loss is a loss. A win's a win, right? I love the word value. That word is the most ridiculous word in all everybody talks about in this. Oh, yeah, I got good value. Really? Is there any value in ripping up a ticket? You know, I mean, I got the best of the number. I lost by 9, but I got the best of the number. Your point's well taken. You want to get the best of the number, but the value, I don't know, the value thing. I'm going to bet it because there's value. Yeah, but are you sure you like the game? No, but there's value.
Well, I mean, I will say this too. I get a vendetta. I get very angry when I know that a team's not going to cover, so I hope they get their asses kicked.
Sure.
It's just kind of the way that my modus operandi here when it comes to the NFL if you're not going to cover, then I hope you get blown out.
Oh, I get like that with golf. You know, I mean, you're sitting here going, you know, I've got, you know, that idiot, that guy. And I'm sitting there going, well, yeah, I mean, okay, maybe, you know, cost me about $300. Cost him $300,000, you know.
All right, so we take a look here at Tampa Bay and Atlanta. And all of a sudden, I mean, if you would have told me 3 weeks ago that Atlanta would be a 4-point favorite over anybody other than Miami and Washington, I probably would have called you crazy. But here they are, a 4-point favorite against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, how about this turnaround for the Falcons?
And actually, they're going to have a say in what's going to happen for the postseason to a degree. Maybe home field or something along those lines with games again, another game against New Orleans. And then they've got a date at San Francisco, December 15th, which actually could prove to be a really, really good football game. We said when they went to the bye, they had one way to go. Well, there were two ways to go. Yeah, you run for the bus and Quinn's out of here. And Quinn's probably still out of there. Or during the bye, they say, look, let's just start our season over and blah, blah. And it sure seems like they've started their season over. And this defense, which was a sieve, is playing at a ridiculous level now. And, you know, I think playing with the lead, they can run the ball a little bit. Hill was okay. And Ryan's been efficient with the football. But for 2 weeks, it looks like a completely different football team.
And what makes it tough is that you've had a Tampa Bay team that, you know, we think the defense is a little bit better there with what they've had going on. The offense, it is what it is. You know, I mean, you've got Jameis Winston who makes a lot of great plays, makes a lot of plays that makes you want to rip your hair out. It's been a lot more of the ripping your hair out for him this season. And that's the worry for me about Tampa Bay here in this spot. And I think there is, to upset you a little bit, I do think there is some value on Tampa Bay plus 4.5. But when you get a Saints defense without Marshon Lattimore and you don't hang a big number on them with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, but what are you doing here? So I don't know if I can trust Tampa Bay this week.
Don't you think we can trust the over? I mean, Tampa Bay can go up and down the field. And Atlanta, Jones, Ridley had a big game. Hooper's out. It's funny how one guy's absence opens the door for another guy. It's like Ridley's this invisible guy where Julio Jones gets double coverage all the time and Ryan just gets tunnel vision towards Austin Hooper. Okay, Hooper wasn't there. So all of a sudden he brings Ridley's the guy who's out there one-on-one is really a big play threat, and they're incorporating him again. So I think that bodes well for them. But Tampa can go up and down the field. The one thing you know you're going to get, the one thing we don't know, though, is what part of the field will it happen, is that Winston will do two or three insanely stupid things. But a lot of the times when he does those stupid things, it's like instant potatoes, you know? It's like points, you know? So you got to figure both of these offenses are going to have their moments, and then you factor in the Tampa turnover quotient. I don't know. I don't know how this thing does anything other than go over. And the money's coming on the under, although the opener was 54.5.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be looking for a high-scoring game, too. You know, you look at Atlanta in that game against New Orleans, and they kind of gift-wrapped that, or New Orleans kind of gift-wrapped that game for Atlanta. They had four penalties that turned into first downs that would have set up fourth down situations. So Atlanta was able to maintain the football, keep that defense off the field. That certainly helped them. And last week against Carolina is just regressing in a big way. This Kyle Allen thing is not working anymore. Everyone's just game planning for Christian McCaffrey. Cam Newton's done for the year. Carolina's just, they're not going anywhere now. So while it's impressive that Atlanta went on the road, won by 26 points as an underdog, I think it says more about where Carolina is right now. So I agree with you. I think that can be a good setup for the over.
Well, the Carolina thing you nailed, and I've been drawing this weird analogy. Remember, I lost track of time probably, 15 years ago? The Wildcat thing with the Dolphins, remember when they rolled that out?
Yeah.
And they went nuts for a month. Oh, look at this. This is innovative. It's this, it's that, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay, great. Yeah, give them a month. Defensive coordinator's got it on tape. Okay, here's what we do. And that was the end of it. And I think the same thing's going on with Allen. Like, why are we overthinking this? You know, let's put eight guys in a box. McCaffrey's not going to beat us. And, you know, can this Allen kid beat us? And he's been okay. But at the end of the day, if you can take McCaffrey away, they got problems.
Yeah. And that's the thing. When you're so dependent on one player, I mean, you know, what else are the Panthers going to do? And Ron Rivera, I think the game is kind of passing him by, too. I think we're kind of seeing that this year where, you know, he's not a very good coach, I don't think. Certainly not a good X's and O's type of guy. Not a good in-game adjustment kind of guy. And I don't think he really knows what to do at this point in time. And we're kind of seeing that play out a little bit week after week. One more game to touch on with you here in the NFL, Brian, then we'll talk some NHL. Giants and Bears. And not every place in the market has this game up. We're kind of waiting to see if Chicago winds up going with Chase Daniel as opposed to Mitch Trubisky, not going to have too much of an impact on the line. Giants plus six or so going to Soldier Field here, but man, the Bears are a disaster.
What did I do to you that you're making me talk about this game?
I'm sorry. We can talk about a different game.
No, I'm just. Hey, listen, man. It's a football game, it's on the board. I don't know. And the scary thing is, that, and if you're a Bears fan, I got a bunch of friends who are Bears fans, and the draft is an inexact science. I mean, I could tell you all these great players, like the Bills. I'm like in the third round, I'm in the second round. I'm like, take Russell Wilson. And they took a wide receiver that never even made the team. I'm like, what, are you kidding me? I mean, who are these? They traded up to get this guy, and, you know, Mahomes and Deshaun Watson were there. And the terrifying thing of it is, if Trubisky doesn't go, the drop-off is next to nothing from Trubisky down to Chase Daniel. So that's telling you something. You know, then the real question is, did he get the hook or was he hurt? And I think the jury's still out on that one. You know, the Giants, the die's been cast for them. Their season's been toast. But every game is an important game for them in terms of Jones' development. It's a weird game. I think both of these teams are toast on a stick. To me, a lot of times when that's the case, it kind of leads to more of a goofier kind of up and down game. I trust the rookie quarterback more than anything that's going on with the Bears right now. It's a tough one. I mean, it's a big pass for me. I'm certainly not laying 6.5 with the Bears. I can tell you that. If you had to, and weather's an issue now, Adam, I'd probably lean under the total just the way, you still got Khalil Mack running around out there. I'd probably go under, but it is certainly one that will not be on my dance card. How's that?
All right, well, I'll make amends then. You tell me a game that you're kind of interested in here for this week. We'll talk about it.
See, I opened my big mouth. Well, how about the Raiders going cross country to take on the Jets, laying a field goal? It's that now they've been road warriors, right? So they've got that feather in their cap, and they survived that kind of dealio. But that's just a I'm a Bills fan, right? I see teams like this, and you go and you play great. There's always a game. There's always a game in there where you spit the bit against someone you should have beat. I mean, the Bills-Browns game, I'm still mad about the Bills-Browns game. There's no way the Browns should have beat the Bills. I still want to vomit, right? But there's always that game. There's always that banana peel game. And you're sitting here looking, oh, yeah, they get the – let's see. Let me just double-check this. They get the Jets, then the big ones. And oh, by the way, okay, here. Let's just cut to the chase. I'm taking the Jets, all right? You got – cross-country travel, playing a breakfast football game on their body clock, and oh, by the way, next week is the game. They've got the Chiefs next week. I'd be very leery of this being a banana peel game for the Raiders.
I think it makes sense. And also, too, I mean, you had a Raiders team last week, and I took them in the Super Contest and the Circa Million. They were 110% the right side in that game. They badly outgained Cincinnati by 140 yards. They had four trips into the red zone. Cincinnati only had one, and they just squandered their red zone opportunities. And it always worries me with a team like that, that, now all of a sudden has some expectations. They were a double-digit favorite, which is a very rare thing for the Raiders. They've got this hope of being a wild card type of team. I want to see you blow out teams that you're supposed to blow out. I want to see you cover that game against Cincinnati. The fact that they couldn't, the fact that they still have a lot of things to iron out would worry me a lot going cross country here against the Jets. So I think that does make a lot of sense where your head's at there.
And the other one I would just throw out. Yeah, the Bengals, they're sitting there with the bagel on the board. And, oh, God, no. That pressure of we can't have a winless season. They got some opportunities here. Steelers are coming in. That was a punch to the gut. Losing to the Browns, probably the death knell for their playoff chances. They host the Jets. They're at Cleveland, and then they're at Miami. So the Bengals, I think, have a handful of chances, and they'll play. They'll circle the wagons, right? I mean, oh, my God, we can't be a winless team. I'm telling you, there's a new worst team in football. The worst team in football is Washington. I mean, the Haskins kid, it's just he's lost. Detroit's strutting in there with, with a backup quarterback, but I think across the board, Detroit's – I think a decent football team that's had some bad breaks and now the injuries. But Washington is really bad. Really, really bad. I mean, they got the Gucci kid helps, and McLaurin's a nice player. But Haskins, man, he's a deer in the headlights out there. He's a kid. He's a rookie. But you wonder if that was a Daniel Snyder swing and a big strikeout.
Certainly looks that way here so far. And we'll transition over to the NHL side here, excuse me. And man, if you like a lot of games in the NHL, pay attention on Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, because these cards have been completely loaded. Two games on Monday, two games on Wednesday. I think it's three games on Friday, maybe this week, but Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, where it's at here in the NHL. One quick note before we break down a few games for tonight, Greg Wyshynski tweeting this out earlier this morning, 6.2 goals per game on average, second highest in 23 years, right behind the season just after the lockout, the 05-06 season, 6.3. 72% of skaters have scored a goal this season. Highest percentage since 93-94, which is kind of mind-boggling when you talk about how wide open the game was there in the late 80s and early 90s. But man, there's a lot of goals being scored in this league right now, Brian.
That's right. And then talk to me on January 15th or whatever when, it, you know, hockey's hockey. It'll tighten up. The points will be at a premium. Teams will start protecting the point. You know, yes, lots of goals. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, but then some of these teams are, you know, putting up boxcar numbers. But it will regress to the mean. The time of year, hockey's, it's like this. It's pond hockey in the beginning. Get to, you know, past the holidays, things tighten up a bit. Then you get the trade deadline. It tightens up even more. And teams start playing a playoff style of hockey. So, yeah, we're getting lots of goals. But that doesn't mean there aren't good goalies out there and there aren't teams that are under teams. I think when you factor in, you know, some of these teams are like it's the style of play. Washington and Chicago. Chicago's adapted to this because part of it, I got to believe, is what they were seeing Washington do. Washington's playing like the Central Red Army team. I mean, it's nuts. They're just throwing everybody at – they're five guys charging. And Holtby's back there, and he's, you know, he must be on board with it. He's facing 23-on-2 and 2-on-1 breaks a night because Washington's just throwing the sink at teams. And it's working, and they're racking up points like it's a slot machine. I don't know that that can work in the playoffs, but it doesn't matter. It's about getting to the playoffs, and at the moment it's working. And then Chicago, about 2.5 weeks ago, they changed their formula where they were playing a forward high in the defensive zone. Now, what that leads to is there are times when Chicago's getting pinned in their own end and teams are working them over on the cycle. But what happens is when Chicago, a defenseman gets the puck, his outlet pass to that high forward is automatically creating a 3-on-2. And Chicago's creating a boatload of chances and giving up a boatload of chances. And, you know, Leonard's been really good. Crawford's actually been really good of late, too. But the Chicago games and the Washington games, just the way they're playing. I went to the Blackhawks-Golden Knights game. I've never seen a hockey game like that. I swear to God. It was 5-on-5. A 5-on-5 game that was played like it was overtime. It was like a 3-on-3 game. There were 2 penalty shots. There must have been 7 breakaways. It was insane. It was a 5-3 game, and by a country mile, the 2 best players on the ice were the goalies, Fleury and Crawford. So it's a stylistic thing at the time of year, you know, Adam, and then these guys will all adjust. It happens every year.
Well, like you said, I mean, it seems like something that's going to continue to be the norm here early on in the season will settle down, as you mentioned, as teams get tired going into the winter, the dog days of the season. And then, of course, as things tighten up for the playoffs, teams protecting the overtime point, so on and so forth. What are you looking at here tonight for the November 19th card? Anything jump out to you?
Well, one thing that doesn't change are the opportunities that present themselves. We're going to start getting these dad's trips. You had the mom's trip, and Edmonton won the first game 6-2, and then they lost the second one. I think moms are more forgiving of a bad game than the dads. The dad's trips are going to start kicking in, so don't lose sight of that one. But one of the angles that's just a monster, and it's not foolproof, but over the course of the time, you're making money because these are all plus-price plays. Our team's coming home from a long road trip, and that first game home is brutal to play. It's happened to Vegas twice. They've come back from the East Coast. They got mauled by Colorado 6-1, and then Chicago just beat them 5-3. Last week, you said, though, you know, the big menu of games, Tuesdays and Saturdays. There was a game last week. There's all these games. And I know I said on Vegas Hockey Island, I said, hey, folks, if you're so inclined, of all the games that was out there, the best bet on the card to me is Winnipeg plus $1.45 at Florida. Florida's coming home from a 5-game Western road swing. And then they traipsed back through Boston and came back from a 4-goal deficit in the third period to rally and win the game 5-4. First game home from a long road trip off one of the biggest regular season wins probably that franchise has ever had. And is Winnipeg's the best play on the card plus $1.45. They beat them. The first game home is a brutal game to play for these guys. They got wives. They got, you know, things to take care of. You're regrouping from the travel and all that stuff. And there's one of those games tonight, and that's Detroit played at Anaheim, at LA, and at San Jose. And Detroit's actually, I mean, for them, playing a little bit better. They're producing some offense. But they're home hosting Ottawa tonight. And the number, I think, is even telling you this. I think you can catch maybe plus a dime with Ottawa. Ottawa is a young team that's going nowhere fast. But you know what? They compete. They really do. They play really hard. I like Ottawa tonight with Detroit coming home from the road trip, and I think there'll be goals in that game. I like Ottawa in the over.
Well, I will throw this one at you here because I did a Google search, and again, we talk about how difficult it is to find these things. We've got a dad's trip that starts tonight. Tampa Bay in St. Louis. That line's going up to Tampa Bay minus $1.20, minus $1.25.
Now, pray tell, where did you find this? You just Googled dad's trips, or how did you find this? Because
I did.
The hard part is finding out about it.
It is. It is not easy to find out. I Googled dad's trip NHL, and then I set the search results to be in the past week. And there's an article that went up a half hour ago on TampaBayLightning.com, their NHL.com site, with the dad's trip announcement that it's today in St. Louis and then coming up here in Chicago. They also get the tour of the Anheuser-Busch Brewery in St. Louis. So maybe that'll be a new one here. You know, go get some beer in St. Louis. So,
well, in the destination, the one thing I can say, and honestly, I look all the time, Adam, the Edmonton one got by me. I'm walking in to do my radio. You got time for a real quick story?
Absolutely.
Real quick? I'm walking in. I finished Sportsbook Radio. So I got 6 minutes between shows, and I'm going walking back in the studio, and the receptionist says, "You got to take this phone call." I go, "What's up?" Goes, "Some guy desperately needs to talk to you." I'm like, "Well, this can't be good." You know, so I grab the phone, and the guy goes, "Hi, my name's Dave from San Diego." I go, "Well, hi, Dave from San Diego." He goes, "I just had to get hold of you," and it was Monday. He goes, I give the guy my cell number. He goes, "Yeah, I found out Saturday morning Edmonton has got their mom's trip going on. I had no way to get hold of you over the weekend." You know, so of course he tells me, and then they lose the second game with the moms. But I gave the guy my cell number. I said, "You find out about any of those things, please let me know." So the hard part is finding out about it. It's just a ridiculous angle, man. These guys, and the beauty of it is that you say, "Well, okay, well, they got one." But no, the beauty of it is, both goalies are going to play on the trip. Both goalies have a dad. So it's like you win the first one for the dads, and then you win the second one for the backup goalie who's got a dad. It's an amazing angle.
It is, and I will also tell you, not only that, but their dog mascot, Bolt, is also on the trip. So Yellow Lab, I think he is. Beautiful dog, by the way. But he's also on the trip. So, you know, you got a canine.
Dog's trip.
Dogs and dads. So Tampa Bay for the mortgage on your house tonight against St. Louis. They also play Chicago here on Thursday.
Laying 20 cents, huh?
Yeah, not bad, right?
What's the puck line? Plus 250?
Yeah, somewhere in the plus 200 range.
Yeah, well, there you go. let's not overthink this.
No, well, we found one. I'm glad we finally found one. I mean, we talk about it all the time, but it is.
I Google it every day. I don't. The one day I don't do it, you find it, and that's the you get.
It went up a half hour ago. I'm gonna say it's an East Coast thing. You would have found it if it would have went up, you know, in an hour and a half or so.
But the one thing you can do, honestly, and let's see what happens tonight. But I mean, if you bet all these games blindly, you're gonna make money this year. You're gonna be way ahead. But you can look for a two-game road trip, and the ideal thing is a three-day trip. They don't want to take the dads can't go on a four-game road trip or be on the road with them for 5 days. Generally, you got a game, a day in between for them to have the time together to do whatever it is they're doing, and then the next game, and that's all she wrote. So you're always looking for a two-game window, and generally speaking, like I'm looking at Vegas's schedule. I don't know for a fact, but I could lay dollars to donuts. They have a two-game trip going to Nashville and Dallas, and that's what they did in their first year of their existence. I'm almost certain that'll be when Vegas decides to do it. But if you go look at a team's schedule, you'll find there are only two or three realistic opportunities for them to do it. Like, I was running around like my hair was on fire, and Chicago did win the game in here anyway. But last week, here, Chicago's coming to town, and then they were going to Nashville. I go, well, that's got to be the dad's trip, the like event destination cities now, you know, and it wasn't. So there's a two-game window for Chicago that's like the week before Christmas, and they're not real exotic locations. But, okay, dad's trip, holiday time, that's probably when Chicago's is. You can almost figure out when it is.
Yeah, I think you also look for that Florida and Tampa Bay double. You know, go down to the Sunshine State, get away from whatever cold-weather city these guys live in.
Yeah.
That's another one I'd look at, too.
For the East Coast teams, yeah, certainly. Certainly. Well, that's where it always started. It was always the Tampa-Florida hop, you know, but now Nashville's is everybody, you know, raves about how much fun Nashville is, and now throw Vegas into the hopper. I would think Nashville and Vegas at the end of the day would probably be the place where I said this for before they ever existed, and for a year coming up, going, you know, everybody, oh, they got to be really good at home. And I said, yeah, well, I got news for you. You figure you get 41 home games. You're telling me that 30 teams aren't going to want to do their dad's trip in Vegas? Yeah, I'm sitting there going, half your games, you're going to have the dads coming in here. And you know, sometimes the schedule just doesn't permit that, but Nashville and Vegas make complete sense, and the Florida teams.
All right, real quick, we'll finish up the segment here talking some golf. RSM Classic is the PGA Tour event, the DP World Tour Championship over on the European Tour. Much stronger field for the European Tour, obviously, but pretty decent field for the RSM with Webb Simpson, Billy Horschel, Matt Kuchar's there. Harris English has played well recently, Kevin Kisner. Interesting that Alex Noren is playing the PGA Tour event as opposed to the European Tour event. But who do you like this weekend out of these two tournaments, Brian?
The RSM is what, Sea Island, Georgia. So is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
It's Georgia, right? It's not South Carolina, right?
No, Georgia.
Yeah. All right. Webb Simpson's 8-1. I mean, that cat was out of the bag. Anything in North South Carolina, Webb Simpson was always a threat. There are eight guys that actually live here. The one I'm going off the board a little bit. Like Zach Johnson lives there. There's 7-8. Kisner's another guy. So the course knowledge, and it's their backyard. I'll throw a price at you. There's two of them I came up with. One, his form is actually better. And I burned a lot of money on this guy, and he was kind of gone off the radar for me. Brian Harman at 60-1. Georgia Bulldog. And, you know, hovering around the top 15, top 20 in recent weeks. Brian Harman at 60-1 is a nice price. And this is the kind of tournament, too. I think of Kevin Streelman at a grenade price, 90-1. He's one of these guys. He's the new Charlie Hoffman, you know, where you're nine shots back and you shoot 64 in the final round and you make $190,000 and leave, you know. But I think Streelman could do one of those where he's 3-4 back and maybe have that big day, but it might be good enough to hang a number. And so I'm price hunting a little bit here. I'm taking a shot with those two guys. But like I said, Kisner's 28-1, local guy. He's won there before, I believe. So, of course, knowledge matters.
Yeah, it definitely does. And Brian Harman, another guy that lives there. So that's another one that definitely makes sense with him.
It's on PGAtour.com. Poston's one of them. They're like eight guys. And I was playing Brian Harman because he was a Georgia Bulldog and figured he'd play this. I did not see his name on the list. Is he actually a resident there?
Yeah, that's what I just saw. So.
Oh, well, okay. I like it even more now.
All right, what about the European Tour side? Strong field here. McIlroy and Rahm well up at the top of the board. Fleetwood after that. Reed, Rose, Hatton, Oosthuizen,
well, this
Fitzpatrick,
is it.
Stenson. This is a big-time event.
Yeah, this is the Road to Dubai thing, and this is their tour championship. McIlroy's 4-1. And I was doing a preview with a buddy of mine, and we went through all these guys, and I said, how did we not mention John Rahm? You know, John Rahm's a little over 6-1, certainly. Tommy Fleetwood out of nowhere. His form was so bad, Adam. I mean, he was playing military golf. He was left, right, left, right. He was awful. And he put it together, won $2.5 million or $2.6 million down in South Africa last week. He's all of a sudden right there with a chance to you know, the last 2 weeks of the year, you know, become a gazillionaire, as if he isn't already. Patrick Reed's always a danger on the European Tour. I'm going off the board a little bit, though. The one thing, you know, it's almost like the NASCAR race. at Homestead. Yeah, Bush was dominant. Bush won the race. That always boggles the mind to me, too. Okay, yeah, those four guys are vying for the championship. How does it always end up that those four cars run 1, 2, 3, 4? Like, does everybody else, like, you know, do they take spark plugs out of their car all of a sudden? I don't understand. You know, I'm sitting here going, all that matters to win the championship is Kyle Busch had to beat the other three guys. So couldn't somebody else win the race at 30-40-1? And it didn't play out that way. But that's the thing you got going here. You know, you don't have to win this tournament to win the championship. I think in an event like this and over Dubai, the price play I'm going to take a fire with is Rafa Cabrera-Bello, 50-1. And you got other kids that are motivated, though. You got McIntyre and Kitayama. They're in a horse race for Rookie of the Year, and it's probably going to be determined in this tournament. And those two guys are in good form. McIntyre's 33-1. The Kitayama kid is 45-1, and he was just in a playoff 2 weeks ago. So the kids are in good form, but this is the crowning jewel for the European Tour. I'm gonna take a little flyer with Cabrera-Bello to step up to the plate, win the tournament, and the other guys are fighting each other with the pressure of winning the whole thing.
Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how can people check out your two shows?
Thank you, Adam. Noon to 2 Pacific time, KSHP.com. There's a listen live function there. The shows are archived at sportsbookradio.com. We got the odds makers. We got handicappers. And we get great guests on the hockey show. If you're a hockey fan, think you really like the hockey show, it's not just about the Golden Knights. It is league-wide discussion. And we do talk about it, too, from a wagering perspective. You can follow me on Twitter, Brian Blessing. I do tweet out the shows. You can pretty much get the content for the shows there or go to all the archives at sportsbookradio.com. And, sir, we will be doing some videos for this fine organization here. Probably get around to it tomorrow. I got a hockey game tonight, so I got a kind of a jam-packed day today. But we'll get our Bang the Book videos up. We'll do a little golf. Maybe we'll throw a hockey video in there, and we'll dissect a couple of NFL games for you on bangthebook.com.
Once again, that's Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, at Brian Blessing on Twitter. Brian, appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me, and we'll talk to you again next week.
And in spite of the fact you made me talk about the Bears and the Giants, all right, I love you like a brother, so I'm going to do this for you. Get a saucepan. Whiskey, honey, and lemon. Put it in a saucepan. Heat it up as hot as you can stand it. Choke it down, kid. Your pores will turn out to be the size of dimes. You'll be sweating inside of 30 seconds. It's the only thing that'll get rid of the common cold. Honey, whiskey, and lemon hot.
Sounds good. I appreciate it, man. Thanks, Brian. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, buddy.
Once again, you can find Brian Blessing's work on Twitter, at Brian Blessing, and check him out over on our Bang the Book YouTube page. We got one more guest, one more segment here for this November 19th edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is professional handicapper Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Ralph, how's it going today, man?
Adam, going great. Appreciate being on, and gotta love mid-November with every sport in full gear now.
Yeah, it is a very, very busy time of year, to say the least. So I know you're doing a lot with college football as well as college basketball. We'll tackle those two sports betting markets here on today's show. We start on the college football side of things. And, you know, this is a very interesting time of year because you've got a lot of differing motivations. You've got college football playoff. You've got division and conferences. You also have teams that are just ready for the year to be over. So a lot of interesting things going on in college football here as we head into week 13.
There is, Adam, and there's a couple things I wanted to bring up. And, you know, for those that follow me on Twitter, they know I don't give my opinion. I don't pay attention to stuff going on in Twitter. There's no politics. I just put up information that I learned handicapping, and I love sharing that information. And this goes back to the North Coast days and situations that occur. And with, you know, the Killer Sports database, it allows me to actually back up things that we've talked about. And, you know, when you're looking at those things we've talked about, the numbers back it up. So let's go through and show some of those situations. Well, we know that every team goes in the season basically wanting to get to a bowl. I don't care who you are. When you're going through your schedule, you think, well, there's potential to win this game and this game and this game, and we could probably get to six wins. When when you have your seventh loss and you're off a loss, your bowl hopes are dashed. Your postseason hopes are dashed. So when teams are off a loss and it's their seventh loss of the season, and now they're a home dog of eight or more, so they're a bad team anyway. Since 2014, those teams have gone 18-33 against the spread, 35%. The fades this week are Bowling Green against Ohio and South Carolina on Clemson. Now, the South Carolina situation you have to look at and weigh in the factor of having your rivalry game on deck, but just something for our viewers to have moving forward. When you're off a loss and it's that seventh loss, it's normally a negative play on that team. Now, on the flip side of that, when teams are trying to get to a bowl, you're in November and you have five wins. Now you're a home dog this week. What happens? You have pressure. We need one more win. You're probably looking at your schedule and say, hey, if we get this game, we're going to a bowl. We get to go and celebrate the postseason. Well, since 2014, in November, when a team has five wins and they're a home dog, they've gone 29-57 against the spread, only 33%. Often public thinks, oh, they need a win, or they're due to win, or they need five wins to get to a bowl. Well, that's just added pressure. That's more pressure on this team. That's more anxiety. That's teams that are starting to play a little tighter and make mistakes. Those fade teams this week, Arizona State and Charlotte. And just one more that I've been talking about on Twitter for, this entire season. When teams are outgained by 120 yards and won the game, and now they're an away dog, they've gone 14-34 since 2014. That fade is on Illinois against Iowa. But listen to this. The last 29 plays, if you're a dog of 1-18.5, so you're not a 19, you're not a 20, you're not a 30-point dog where a lot of times in November the favorite doesn't care. The teams that outrushed their foes by 120 yards and won the game and now are an away dog, 4-25 against the spread, 13.8%. So that's Illinois. So again, three things we talked about. You're off a loss and it's your seventh loss of the season. You're a home dog of eight or more. That's a fade. November, you have five wins. Now you're a home dog. That's a fade. Teams that outgained their opponents by 120 yards and won the game, now they're a away dog. That's a big fade.
Well, I think it's important too, and those are all very, very good trends, very good sample sizes with those as well. The thing about it is, you know, if you've got five wins and you're this late into November, you're not a very good team. And I know everyone's kind of beating everybody this season, but you get that must-win inflation that gets built into the market a little bit. Or as you mentioned, if you're a home dog in that spot when everyone knows that you need to win that game or win your next game, yeah, you're probably not that good of a team. So why would you want to trust some of those teams? Unless all of a sudden they flip the switch and they're playing really well for one reason or another. But if they have five wins at this time of the year, I mean, it's not really a team I want to bet on with expectations.
Agree. There are certainly different situations. And, you know, we've seen some teams, you know, Miami of Ohio a few years ago, I believe, was the first to go 0-6 and then win their last six. Obviously, you're looking at a team that's red hot, and that's a different situation. But, you know, too often at this time of the year, teams are banged up. Teams are injured. Teams have, you know, expectations that are blown. And we think just because they want a sixth win that it's that easy to get. Well, you know, it's not. You're the inferior team, and the other team's trying just as hard or harder to get that win.
Yeah, and of course, too, I mean, you know, it's very hard to quantify this. It's very, very hard to get into the minds of these teams and of these players. But some of these teams don't want to go to a bowl game. They don't want those extra practices. They don't really care about playing another game, especially if you're a team that, you know, usually you have greater expectations for a season. Now you're not going to get to a certain point. Maybe you don't want to go play in that bowl game. Maybe you don't need that bag of swag or to get beaten up again. Especially for a younger team, I think this could be the factor, because for older teams, we've got some senior players. They want to get another opportunity to show themselves in front of the scouts. sometimes those younger teams maybe don't value that bowl appearance as much.
Well, I can tell you this. You know, that's the million-dollar question, Adam, is what the players want. I guarantee you that the coach wants, because when the coach is going to get 15 extra practices in December, it is such a boost towards the next season, getting those young kids in and watching them play against the number ones, against experienced veterans. Because remember, when you get into spring practices, you're missing all those seniors that left. And when these freshmen are practicing, well, they're now practicing against backups. They're not practicing and learning the experience of practicing against the starters like they do when you get to the bowl game practices.
Anything else before we break down a couple of specific games here for this week that you want to touch on? I mean, again, at this time of the year, obviously you've got weather considerations to keep in mind, but also, you know, your power ratings maybe lose a little bit of value just because you're trying to figure out, you know, a team like Clemson, for example, I can't power rate them high enough. I can't do it right now to get the spreads that they're being asked to cover. And of course they're covering them rather easily. You get that at this time of the year too, where teams are actively looking to run up the score because they need the style points.
Yes and no. I mean, when you're the top four, you don't need the style points. When you're Clemson, Ohio State, and LSU, all you need to do is win out. It's those other teams that are in the second level. You know, I actually do have Clemson high enough. You know, this past week, I had Ohio State 53 at Rutgers, and I had Northwestern 38. So my power ratings, in fact, I left off a lot of winners last week where I had differences at the end of the week by 3 or 4 points, and they weren't that big of a difference early in the week, and those lines moved so much. So there was some power I left off, and in fact, right now, I dropped Ohio State down 1 with the Rutgers game. I moved up Clemson couple. I now have Clemson at 105 and Ohio State at 104. So I actually have Clemson now ahead of Ohio State for the first time this year.
But if the two teams played in the semifinal, you would not expect Clemson to be -1, right?
Well, we're going to learn a lot. We're going to learn, you know, Ohio State's going through the ringer right now. Clemson, we don't know what we have. Hell, you know, you're done. Your season's over. You have South Carolina and you have an ACC championship. No big deal. You know, Ohio State's going to have Penn State, Michigan, and Minnesota. They may have the toughest 3-game stretch there is in all of college football, let alone a team in the AP top 20 or a team that wants to go potentially to the playoffs. So, you know, if Ohio State looks good, they're going to be ahead of me. But we can see Ohio State get a couple injuries and really get banged up these next 3 weeks, where Clemson's not going to have that as an issue.
I guess one other thing I could ask you about is the teams that do get a 6th win. You know, now they don't really have to play with that pressure, but teams that play free and easy are usually a lot more dangerous than that team with its back up against the wall. And also, you can improve your bowl standing. So those teams that get to that magic number, are you kind of looking to play on them more than play against them?
You know, it's not a situation that I've looked at. And I'm going to try to, as we're talking, I'm going to try to do that. And we'll go into our first game, Adam, and I'm going to try to do two things at once, and we'll figure it out as we're talking about one of the games.
All right. Sounds good. Yeah. I was just curious because, again, I mean, you know, you're talking about a team that's no longer really playing with pressure. It's just about trying to get to a more attractive bowl destination because, you know, some of them aren't particularly great and some of them are really great to get to. So maybe that is kind of an angle for us to explore a little bit here as we go along on today's show. But I want to start by asking you about TCU and Oklahoma, game 137-138. And it's been fascinating to me to see these Oklahoma lines get bet up with the defense kind of struggling a little bit, with the offense kind of going in spurts. They'll play one good half. They'll play one bad half. That is what we saw from them against Baylor last week. Whereas TCU has been a popular sharp side most of the year here, Oklahoma 17.5 up to as high as 18.5 for this week's game against the Horned Frogs.
I looked up an angle on this because, you know, I know you wanted to talk about it. So here's what I looked up. I looked up home favorites from week 10 on that are off an away win when both teams were ranked in the AP top 15. So obviously, Oklahoma was off an away win. Both teams were ranked. You're later in the year, so the rankings meet a lot more, and now you're a home favorite. And I saw the record, and I saw, 19-9, 32.1%. That's a fade against Oklahoma. But a lesson for all our listeners, when you're looking at trends and angles and you have to look at the current form compared to the entire period of time since 1998, from 1998 to 2014, that angle was 2-18. From 2015 to now, it's gone 7-1-1. The exact same angle. So 2-18 for 16 years, 7-1-1 the last four seasons. What's changed? Well, I can tell you one thing that's changed, you know, not that entire period of time, is the college football playoffs. One thing that has changed since 2015 is the domination of Alabama and Clemson. They are on the list multiple times. So, you know, when I'm pulling up some of these angles and we're talking about a record back to 1988, it doesn't mean that that trend is still valid because of that. So just some note on that. You know, before we jump into this, Adam, I'm going to give you some kudos. Let me give you what we just talked about before we move on. You are in the month of November. You have six wins on the season. You are off a previous win. So you just got your sixth win. And now you are a favorite. 120-80. An exact 60% against the spread. So we're not talking 80. But hey, if you've got a situation 60% against the spread, and it's a situation that you like, those teams this week are going to be Miami of Ohio, Arkansas State, Washington, Miami of Florida, Iowa State, Louisville, BYU. So if you like those games in the mix, just something for you to think about.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, it does make sense because, again, you know, you know you're going to a bowl game now, and you know that you can improve the bowl game that you go to. And of course, too, I mean, you pick up a sixth win already with 2 weeks left in the regular season. You're probably a pretty decent team. And you know, maybe you're playing a team that has quit on the season because you're in that favorite role, or maybe you're playing a team that, you know, is one of those marginal types of teams. So I think that angle does make a lot of sense, and I'm happy to hear it. And again, that's one of the important things about being able to look this stuff up, is that you may get an idea in your head and you may say, oh, that sounds like it makes sense. Sometimes it will, sometimes it won't, but it's nice when it is quantified and it does look like a pretty good angle.
Adam, I'm gonna put one more scenario in there that we just talked about. You know, originally I ran the month of November. I ran from week 11 on. So we are in week 13 now. So from week 11 on, that record actually goes to 63.6%. So if you are week 11, 12, or 13 like we are now, and you are just off a win, it's been even stronger. So week 12 on, so if you're in your final week, the percentage actually goes down. So it seems to be a very, very good situation, as you talked about. All right, let's talk games. I'm in a fade Oklahoma mode. You know, you look at what they've done and the last 3 weeks, a 3-point win, a 1-point win, a 7-point loss. The Texas game was 7 points. You know, those are your only true competition. You have a defense that is just giving up 400-plus yards the previous two games. We know they held Baylor down, but Baylor was in a pressure-packed situation where, you know, you're in an area that you never thought you would be. Talk about Lamb, who missed last game. If they miss him again, they're going to be in a different situation. And I look at TCU and, you know, going to Texas Tech and getting the win, and the Baylor's the tough loss, and Oklahoma State's the tough loss, and Iowa State's a tough loss, and SMU's the tough loss. You look at every loss they've had. They've not had a loss with the exception of the Iowa State game by seven or more. So it's a situation where I think Dugan's going to be able to score enough to keep it close. You know, obviously you have Oklahoma State on deck if you're OU. You survived. And while people are going to say, well, Oklahoma does need to have style points because they're going to be one of those one-loss teams that potentially has to go up and compare their resume to Bama or some other one-loss teams. Just because you're in that position doesn't mean you can always do it.
Well, and this is one of those things, too. I know you do the college football guides and the stat sheets and all the different stuff that you do over there at Wager Talk. Oklahoma is a very popular team because from a yards per play differential standpoint, they are incredible. So they take a lot of early week money from the quant crowd that does wind up bumping these numbers up a little bit. As the handicapping crowd comes back in the middle of the week, you start to see a little bit of money come in against Oklahoma, or maybe that money just doesn't come in at all if they don't like the spot. So a lot of early week Oklahoma moves that aren't necessarily true moves. They're just based in the statistics for the season.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about Oklahoma is it's, you know, their diff isn't that good because it's their offense that's incredible. They're at a historic pace. You know, I tweeted this out last week. You look at Oklahoma's yards per play on offense. All right, I went back the last 11 years. No one was higher than 7.7 yards per play on offense. Each of the last 3 years, Oklahoma's been 8.9, I think 9.1, and I think 9.5 yards per play. So when you're putting up a first down every play you run, that's going to put you in historic perspective. Buckeyes are number one in the yards per play diff. And, you know, you look at the Buckeyes right now, they're number one on offensive yards per play. They're number one on defensive yards per play. The top four in yards per play diff, Ohio State 3.7, Clemson 3.6, Oklahoma 3.4, Alabama 3.0, and then Utah 2.7, UCF 2.5, LSU 2.3. So all that's been made of that LSU offense, they're only plus 2.3 yards per play diff, just ahead of Georgia, Oregon, Memphis, Baylor, and Louisiana Lafayette.
Speaking of UCF, let's talk about them here for a couple of minutes. Game 179-180. This is an interesting one because we've seen a lot of sharp money hit the board on Tulane over the course of the season. So far this week, this line hasn't moved off of 6, with UCF a road favorite going down to the Big Easy there to take on Tulane. What do you think about this game here, Ralph?
I think Tulane has been overrated. I look at, you know, what they did against Temple. I couldn't believe they were that road favorite. They've lost 3 of their last 4 games. Yes, all 3 have been on the road, but this is a young team that Willie Fritz is starting to learn how to win. And I don't understand why they're getting so much love. I mean, their numbers aren't that good. Yeah, their home road dichotomy is incredible. At home, 541 yards per game. On the road, 378. But I think that has to do with competition as well. You played your tougher competition down the stretch. I think UCF's in a position to have been there and done that. They're looking through and they say, well, if this happens and this happens and this happens, we still can get to the title game. At least that was in the paper today. So someone's buying into that. But, you know, UCF, the difference with the Knights this year is their defense. You know, you look at UConn getting 426 yards, and that was like, what the hell was that couple weeks ago? And then East Carolina getting 483. But, you know, they've gone to this rush attack lately, and they've ran the ball over 40 times, 5 of the last 6 games. They have 4 running backs all over 400 yards, all averaging over 5.6 yards per carry. All of them are going to be healthy this week. And when that running attack allows your defense to be on the field for fewer plays, you know, it's showing that we have a very good defense. This UCF defense only allowing 3.4 yards per carry, only allowing 54% completions. We know Tulane wants to run the ball. I think UCF can shut them down and do that. And I do like the Golden Knights here, or just the Knights, I should say.
All right, so let's talk some college basketball here as we transition to a very different kind of sport, but stay in the college ranks. And we talked on yesterday's show with Kyle Hunter about all the unders that we've seen here so far this season. So outside of that, Ralph, what else stands out to you in terms of the first couple weeks of the college hoops season?
You know, there's not that much. I mean, you know, we're seeing some upsets, and you know, I think the biggest thing is this: is coaches are now recruiting grad transfers. They're setting up their lineups with transfers. It used to be in college basketball, if you had a team with five returning starters or four returning starters with a point guard playing a team with zero returning starters or one returning starter with no point guard, it was almost an automatic play on. But we're seeing teams like Memphis that return no starters that are bringing in the grad transfers and the young freshmen. Nevada is another one. Nevada is a team that doesn't return any starters, but hell, they're very competitive because of their grad transfers. And we're seeing so many more grad transfers where kids used to stay. Now they're gone. They transfer and they get to go in a situation they want to go to. And hell, a kid gets on the grad transfer and everyone's just jumping out and recruiting them. We're seeing it in football. You know, look at the quarterbacks that have gone. You know, Oklahoma has a sign up, grad transfer quarterback needed next year. You know they're going to need one, and who's going to be that? Maybe Ohio State, the same thing. So it really is, the returning starters is becoming such a fake number where, you know, next year I'm going to have to redo the way I do my guide. You know, we'll do percentage of minutes back and then list the grad transfers that are there. So it's just going to take a little more work to get that first week or first couple weeks under your belt in college hoops.
Do you feel like you're starting to settle in a little bit here? I know obviously it was a very tough opening night. I know you were very honest and transparent about that. But since then, do you feel like things are kind of becoming, you know, more of the status quo that you expected?
Yeah, you know, I've been on a 13-8 run since that opening over. And again, you know, this is college basketball. I'm not worried about an over for my season-long record. To me, it was just so devastating because I had so many first-time customers on. And, you know, you can only make a first impression once. And there's a lot of guys that, you know, you do an offer like that, they're never going to be back with you ever again. They're just going to say, screw you, and they remember that. But, you know, it also, reading the write-ups, people could say, oh, yeah, wow, these three teams actually led at halftime, and we only lost this game by a point or 2 points. So, you know, it depends on what level of customer you have, and that helps you move forward. But absolutely in sync now, you know, looking for the value where they're still there with the unders. You know, we're still seeing value with coaches being changed and styles being changed. You know, I guess the one that jumps off the page to me is, you know, Cronin going from Cincinnati to UCLA. And, you know, we saw them have many more unders early because they just can't make the line low enough thinking that this running UCLA team is turning to the Cincinnati team of old. So learning what we are, you know, we still have our mid-majors that are surprising us. Kentucky's upset. You know, Evansville's a very good team. I was actually on them last night with a loss against SMU, but there's a handful of mid-majors that are still there. And the biggest thing for me is the number of grad transfers this year and how they're changing the way you have to look at college basketball in the preseason.
Well, it's interesting, too, a game that we're not going to talk about, but one that I did preview over at bangthebook.com here today, New Mexico and UTEP, a couple of teams that have really hit the grad transfer market hard. That's expected to be one of the top games here tonight. But one of the other games that everyone has an eye on this evening, and we'll talk about a game for Tuesday night, one for Wednesday night, and also one for Thursday night here to finish up the show. Game 665-666, Furman and Alabama. This one was Alabama -3. Now up to as high as 4.5 out there in the market, as Nate Oates is kind of off to a little bit of a slow start trying to mold his team into what he wants.
For those that followed the Buffalo Bulls last year, you know that tempo-wise, they were one of the quickest teams in the country. Well, I'll tell you what, Nate Oates is now the coach of Alabama, and Nate Oates is going to be one of the quickest teams in the country at Alabama. The problem is his guards can't handle it. 22 turnovers against Rhode Island. And he said they're going through growing pains. You know, you have a transfer, Jonathan Query from Villanova, a five-star recruit. He had not been eligible yet. He may be eligible for tonight. So that's a big if. If he plays, Alabama, better team. You also have another point guard, Bell Bolden. He's a game-time decision with an injury. If both of those guys are out, I like Furman. Furman's 4-0. 52-18 under Bob Ritchie as a coach. They can go on the road and win. But with this game, it's going to be a late game for me to see and make sure you check out Query if he becomes eligible, and James Bell Bolden, the transfer from West Virginia. If those two are both out, I'll be jumping on the Furman side.
Now, we talked about this a lot with our mutual friend Brad Powers about how difficult it can be to find injury information in college football. Do you find, you know, a good resources for college basketball for finding out injuries?
No, I don't. It's just a lot of work. It's a lot of newspapers. It's a lot of going through Twitter. And even then, you know, you don't find it because coaches and teams aren't going to tweet out if a player is hurt. It really is just a lot of reading. And there's often times where I find that the opposing beat writer covers the team better and is much more honest about injuries than the team beat writer. The team beat writer is in the paper. He's covering these guys daily. He's talking to the coaches. And, you know, he's giving a lot of times at the beginning of the season, he's writing his forecast with rose-colored glasses on, where, you know, an opposing writer is going to say, hey, listen, Illinois-Chicago was without four returning starters 2 weeks ago in their first two games. You know, now's the opportunity to get them. They're going to get two back this week, so we'll see what happens. So don't stop at reading your local beat writer. Make sure you read the previous beat writer for the game before and what the preview is in the opposition's newspaper.
So we look at Wednesday night's card here in college basketball. Obviously, no lines out for these as of yet. They'll come out here sometime this afternoon. But some of the situational things that we talked about on last week's show, Georgia Tech and Georgia, a game we're going to talk a little bit more about here in a couple minutes, Portland State, San Diego State, San Diego, Belmont and Lipscomb. A lot of these, you know, really crosstown types of rivalries or, you know, little brother, big brother or something like that. A lot of those games popping up here at this time of the year. Again, like I said, we'll focus on Georgia Tech and Georgia, though. Do you handicap these games any differently when, you know, there are some revenge angles or anything like that?
Well, I don't have any revenge angles that I can share with you and say. And it just really depends, where the coaches are and how many starters the teams had back and how experienced they were. You know, Georgia's now won four straight against Georgia Tech and covered four straight. And in fact, you know, they've won those last four games all by double digits, averaging 16 points per game. They've covered all four by over 15 points per game. But in this situation here, if I can get Georgia Tech plus four or more, I will be on them. I'm looking at Georgia, and you look at a 3-0 record, and you may think, wow, this 3-0 record's impressive with a 19-point win, with a 9-point win, and with a 34-point win. Well, when you look at their strength of schedule, they've played the number 350th, you know, basically the lowest schedule. When you look at the defenses they've played, they have played the weakest slate of defenses in the entire country. Western Carolina's at defensive efficiency 328, Citadel 346, Delaware 351. You are now playing a fired up in-state rival that's lost four in a row, and they have the number 41 defense. With Georgia Tech, you're only 2-0, but you've been tested. You played a ACC game. You went into NC State and you won in overtime. That's impressive to me. That gets you ready to take on this Georgia team. You then come home. Is there a letdown after that NC State win? No. You beat Elon handily by 23. I'm going to grab Georgia Tech plus four or more potential. They'll be on my card.
Is this about the time of the year where you start looking at some of the strength of schedule mismatches then?
Yeah, well, yeah, only when they're this obvious. Only when, you know, you can't look at a statistical profile of Georgia and say, oh my gosh, they're plus 32 points per game without looking at they played the weakest schedule there is. And, you know, anyone can tell you, if you have three easy games and they're all at home, you know, and you're not even tested – going into game four, that's a difficult thing to do. You know, the other thing is just look ahead. Georgia played those three-week foes. They got Georgia Tech now. And then they play their first neutral game next Monday against Dayton. That's a game they can easily lose as well.
All right, one more game I want to talk about, and then I just want to talk in general about something coming up here this weekend. But that game is Texas and Georgetown. And correct me if I'm wrong, this one at Madison Square Garden with a pretty good matchup here between the Longhorns, who've been very, very good so far here at the outset of the season, and Georgetown with Patrick Ewing really trying to build this program up a little bit. What do you think about Thursday night's game there between those two teams?
Well, you know, to me, it's one of the biggest edges there is. And the reason is, what did Texas just do last year? Oh, yeah, Texas didn't make the NCAA tournament. They were pissed off about that. What happens? They go to the NIT. What do? They win the NIT. Where were their last two games in the NIT? Madison Square Garden. So you have a team that just went to Madison Square Garden for the Final Four for the NIT championships. Now starts this year, fired up because they didn't make the tournament. Shaka Smart, another team removed. You're 4-0. You already went to Purdue. You handled yourselves on the road. You took care of the teams you were supposed to at home. You know, Northern Colorado, not a horrible team. Cal Baptist, not a horrible team. Did what you had to against Prairie View. You have no one on deck because you have McNeese State. That's another 9 days. And with Georgetown, you know, Georgetown already has one loss to Penn State. And I look at Georgetown, and it's not that often that a player's slump concerns me, but you read the Georgetown papers, and Mac McClung, one of their starters, who had 19 doubles, scored in double figures 19 times last year, scored over 20 three times, he has really struggled. He's shooting under 30%. Patrick Ewing says we have to get him to stay in there, but when he's in there, he's a defensive liability. So the Shaka Smart defense against the Georgia front court, Mac McClung struggling for Georgetown, Texas back in MSG. I will clearly be on Texas. I'll be looking to lay anything about six or less in that range.
All right, so something you and I talked about off air last week, because we were kind of wondering when this would start to be a thing. A lot of early season tournaments here that start Thursday, Friday, the Bahamas, Montego Bay, a couple of them in South Carolina. What is it that you're looking for to play on or against these teams when they do have to play these back-to-backs or 3-3s in these tournaments?
It's just box score study. There is nothing that I can say, hey, you know, the favorites, the dogs, the revenges, the seconds, the thirds. It's just looking at matchups. When you have some of these big mismatches, it's hard to know what you get out of a team. But a lot of times these tournaments are pretty equal, where there's people in the same categories. And, you know, it is just looking at how many minutes they played, what kind of point guards they have. It's still early in the season. The teams that play better defense is usually something I look at, because, you know, the offense, your legs can't get tired shooting threes. Your defense, you seem to keep the same intensity. So no secret at all. It's reading the local papers as well as the local schools' papers. You know, even the Bahamas, you go and read some of the Bahamas newspapers, they have good stories on these teams. They have beat writers that are excited to do it. And, you know, sports writers, not beat writers, but that cover these games and give you little trinkets of what's going on in the games. And also, you know, who they have ahead. When you're looking at a team and they're playing an opponent that they know they're going to beat and they have a tougher game on deck, there's many times that I look and perhaps might play a first half play, because you're going to go full bore in the first half. But in the second half, when you know you're playing a second of back-to-back, you may start getting a few guys in there that you may need the next day that haven't played the minutes because your games have been spread out. So again, knowing what the schedule is, who you play if you win, because they all know who they play if they win. The coaches are already scouting them and will continue to scout them during the tournament. But who you have on deck is as important as who you played.
Ralph Michaels, professional handicapper over at WagerTalk.com. What's going on over there right now, Ralph?
You know, just again, college football's winding down, guys. But if you've not been there, the power ratings, I could care less if you like them or not. This college football stat compare sheet to me is just still so valuable because you're looking at strength of schedules and these stats that they have. Check out it a little later today. I will have an NFL last 5 weeks. I will have only the NFL stats for the last 5 weeks. So you're going to have yards per game diff, yards per play diffs, where their offense ranks, where their defense ranks. And when you get into November and December in the NFL, if you find teams that over the last 4 or 5 games has an advantage rushing with their offense against the defense and has an advantage with their rush defense against the opposition's offense, that's something you want to look at very closely this time of the year.
Once again, make sure that you're following Ralph on Twitter as well, at CalSportsLV. Ralph Michaels, WagerTalk.com. Appreciate the time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
Adam, always a pleasure. Thank you.
There you go. There's Ralph Michaels, professional handicapper over at WagerTalk.com and at CalSportsLV on Twitter. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com and also welcome Wes Reynolds back to the program. He's a host over at VSiN. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.